You got to know where to find it, know how to find it, know where the markets are, and know when to sell. You never count your money too near the buyer. There'll be time enough for counting when recycling's done. We dump and pick, classify, convey and screen and densify. Whatever you may specify, we'll pack for you. We upgrade, downgrade, separate, clean and sort, beneficiate. Crumble, crush, magnetize, flatten, shred and pelletize. You got to know where to find it, know how to bind it, know where the markets are, and know when to sell. You never count your money too near the buyer. There be time enough for counting when recycling's done. We got PS, PP, PVC, HDP, and LDP. You can buy my PET if the price is right. All my cullets finely crushed, sorted by a human touch. 3/8 inch ceramic free. You can buy it all from me. You got to know where to find it, know how to bind it, know where the markets are, know when to sell. You never count your money too near the buyer. There'll be time enough for counting when recycling's done. Some paper grades are moving slow, not my subs or CPO. OCC's as good as gold, ONP's been sold. Magnets pull the ferrous out, bail it up and ship it out. Aluminum, copper, tin and brass, pays the rent, saves my ass. You got to know where to find it, know how to bind it, know where the markets are, and know when to sell. You never count your money too near the buyer. There be time enough for counting when recycling's done. Got Mercs, Smurfs, IPCs, got the highest quality. Buy from me, I'll sell you FOB, Timbuktu, ship by truck, voter rail. We ship folk or neatly bear. Tell us just how, when, and where. We'll be sure to get it there. You got to know where to find it, know how to bind it, know where the markets are, know when to sell. You never count your money too near the buyer. There be time enough for counting when recycling's done. There be time enough for counting when recycling's done.
Good morning. You're listening to WJUL Lowell 91.5. Just wanted to say hello. This is the Thinking Out Loud Environmental Show. And today we have a few guests who are going to think out loud and give us some open insight on genetic engineering. I'd like to introduce today Kim Foster and Doreen Stabinski. Thanks for coming in, ladies. Great, awesome. So I met Kim at the Earth Day Festival, and she had a table on genetic engineering. And I guess a lot is being talked about, but not a lot of sort of info. So this is going to be a great info session to kind of update people and educate on genetic engineering. So, Doreen, can you kind of give us a little genetic engineering, a little background?
So, genetic engineering is a relatively new process, about a couple of decades old, where scientists can take genetic information from one organism and actually insert it into the genetic information of another organism. So you can cross now a flounder with a tomato, where in the past you could only breed tomatoes with tomatoes, but now you can take genetic information from fish, from pigs, from bacteria, from viruses, whatever, and put it into primarily what they're genetically engineering is food crops. So mixing our food crops with all kinds of species that they were never mixed with before.
Yeah, that's interesting. My dad used to do some genetic engineering. He would take the biggest tomato, you know, save those seeds, and the next year, you know, just that's how he would do it. But I guess now you can do it a lot faster and different.
Right, and in fact, I wouldn't call that process genetic engineering. Right, right. I'd call that traditional breeding, and what breeding, genetic engineers are trying to do is completely change the way that we create new organisms.
So why are some of the reasons that they're doing this process?
I think the primary reason for genetic engineering is profit, right? Because the companies that are doing genetic engineering are large transnational chemical companies, for the most part, and they're creating new products. The first set of products to go on the market were herbicide-tolerant crops. So the chemical companies created crops that were specific for their particular herbicide. So they created a new product that they could sell. Now they can sell their trademarked patented herbicide along with the crops that's you know, directly designed to be used in conjunction with that herbicide.
Right. So, I guess money is. I was thinking, you know, they promote that they have higher yields. But through studies I'm seeing, you know, over the years, the yields start to decrease because of the toxicity in the soil and the land. And traditional, sustainable organic farming is the way to go.
Well, I would agree with you that sustainable organic farming is the way to go. They have touted biotechnology or genetic engineering as the way to increase yields. And of the crops that they have on the market right now, the studies that people have done over the last 5 or 10 years of looking at those crops in the field, they show that they don't increase yields. And in fact, in some crops, you actually are seeing a decrease in yields.
Right, right.
Soybeans, for example, at least 5% decrease in yields of the genetically engineered soy, the soy that's engineered to tolerate that particular patented herbicide Roundup.
So, Can you describe the process or what you call the generic transgenic organism after they breed to, or they kind of do their splicing?
Right. So what companies have to do is first isolate a gene, find a particular trait that they're interested in, and isolate the genetic information.
Like the flounder and the tomato?
For instance, a flounder and the tomato. I mean, the flounder trait that people have been interested in is the ability of flounder to tolerate freezing temperatures in water, and so they're specifically looking for that antifreeze protein in the flounder. And so they find that genetic information in the DNA of the flounder. They can replicate that, and they can insert it into the DNA, into the genetic information of the tomato. They do that by one of two processes. They use a bacterium that infects the tomato and can inject the DNA right into the tomato genome, or they use a gene gun where they coat particles of gold with the DNA, and they just shoot those particles of gold right into the tomato cells, and some of the DNA sticks to the tomato chromosomes, and the DNA is integrated that way.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I've also heard it's bacteria/virus, and so it's, you know, you're making this gene sick so that you can break down a little bit, get it in. Is that sort of...
Well, I would describe it a little bit differently. Yeah. I mean, what you need to do is attach the gene to some kind of information sequence that the tomato can recognize. Because the gene coming from a flounder, a tomato is not necessarily going to be able to turn that gene on and to make it work. And so you've got to attach some kind of sequence that turns the gene on. They generally use a virus for that. They use cauliflower mosaic virus because plant viruses infect plants, and they need to be able to operate within the plant. And so the cauliflower mosaic virus is what's called they use the promoter, the on switch for the gene from the cauliflower mosaic virus. And also you have to attach elements to the gene. So it's not just a gene that goes in, but it's a whole genetic construct with the viral promoter and then bacterial ends, because the bacteria are very good at integrating into the plant genome. And so they use that as the mechanism to get it into the plant genome to integrate into the DNA of the tomato itself.
That's great. Something else that brings up my mind is health effects. I can only imagine integrating this sort of, you know, food. Does it allergies, you know, that kind of thing?
The primary thing that people have been worried about is allergies, because you're moving, because proteins are generally what are the parts of plants that people are allergic to, and they have food allergies. And what you're doing is you're moving genetic information from one organism to another that codes for. The information is information for the manufacturer of a protein. So essentially you're moving novel proteins from one organism to another. The tomato is now making a protein that only flounders used to make, and now tomatoes are making it. The worry is that you have proteins being moved from organisms that have never been part of the human diet. We don't know if they're allergenic. And so now you have all of these new proteins being made in foods, and the potential for those proteins to be allergenic is, you know, is high enough for many doctors to be worried about this particular aspect of genetic engineering.
Thanks. And so I guess, Kim, you're involved with an initiative going on right now with Shaw's, which I think is very exciting. I'm an organic shopper. I like to shop at, you know, at Bread and Circus or Wild Oats in Andover. And so I've gone to Shop and Save or Shaw's when I need to get quick items, and I never see any organic products. And so that gives me no choice. I don't have an option to purchase organics. So your initiative is really exciting. Can you kind of get us up to date on what's going on?
Sure. Shaw's Market is has actually merged with Star Market. And both of those companies are now one. They're owned by Jane Sainsbury's, which is based in the UK. Shaw's here in New England is the second largest food chain, probably aside from Stop and Shop. But we chose the markets campaign first because it's the place where our food meets the consumer. And we know from experience in the UK that consumer pressure really works in changing a company. In the UK, consumers have voiced their opinions and their concerns about genetic engineering and actually forced Sainsbury's to eliminate GE ingredients from their store brands. So that's been very successful, and we hope that that will be done here as we continue to organize and inform communities about what's being sold in their stores. Unfortunately, a lot of these kinds of products aren't labeled at Shaw's, and so we need, because they're not labeled, we really need to pressure the company to sell more food that's healthy and safe. The other reason is because Shaw's does sell part organic in some of its stores through Wild Harvest. And we believe that if you're selling organic food, that you cannot also sell genetically engineered food because it is a threat to the organic industry. So we've been doing this campaign. We just launched our national campaign in April. With a demonstration in Boston, and have been organizing people to take action at their local supermarkets and calling their manager, asking for a meeting with their concerns about genetic engineering. We're also asking folks to go and flyer at Shaw's and Star Markets, and then also just set up tables and inform consumers of what they're eating inside of the store.
Wow, that's great. It amazes me that in the UK their stores are genetically engineered free, but here in the States they're still selling those same products. I guess some demonstrations you're talking about, there's one coming up May 11th in Boston?
There is, at the Fenway Star Market. We're also asking folks, if you want to hook up with other activists in your community, just give us a call in Boston. Our number is 617-868-5079. And we can put you in touch with other activists.
Yes. And I just wanted to say, I forgot to introduce you, if you ladies, to introduce yourselves. Could you kind of just do a quick intro where you come from and what you're doing for work?
Sure. My hometown is Marshfield, Massachusetts. I'm from the South Shore. And I've been always interested in the environment. And ever since I was a little girl, I saw the Greenpeace commercials with Greenpeace activists in little boats, and did an internship in college, which ended up doing some forest protection, and eventually just led me to doing work on indigenous peoples and indigenous farmers, and eventually just led me to the issue of genetic engineering because of, you know, just the severity of the problem and the crisis that we face now with our food security. And how it combines so many different issues about small farmers and local issues and globalization, how it sort of all merges. And we can actually take action right here in our local community. So I just find it very very pressing, but also very inspiring that we can make a change.
And here you are working for Greenpeace, correct?
Exactly.
That's great. Excellent. And yourself, Doreen?
Yeah, I got involved in the issue over 10 years ago. I was doing a PhD in genetics at the University of California at Davis, and while I was doing my PhD, I became aware of the issue of genetic engineering and why people were concerned. They were concerned about the environmental impacts and the human health impacts. And so once I finished my PhD, I decided that I wasn't going to continue on in genetic research, and I started teaching. I currently teach environmental politics at the College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor, Maine, but I also work half-time as science advisor to Greenpeace on the genetic engineering campaign. It's been a great, you know, 2 years that I've worked for Greenpeace, but, you know, watching the issue evolve, watching people in the United States become aware of all of the concerns that people in, around the world have been expressing about genetic engineering for the last, you know, very many years since we've been confronting the technology. And it's quite exciting to see the movement take off in the United States and to see, you know, all of the local activism that's popping up now against supermarkets, you know, not just in this area, but across the United States to also challenge the genetic engineering industry and join hands with all those folks in Europe and other parts of the world that have been fighting against the technology for the last decade or so.
Yeah, I just read an article. European Union, in what, 2003, voted to have genetic engineering labeling, just where you would label on the box that this has genetic engineering material. And President Bush sent the European Union a wonderful letter saying you can't do that. You're going to be, you know, taking $4 billion away from our market. And that's, to me, insanity. Here is a community of, you know, countries who want to make sure that their food supply is healthy, clean, and available to you know, to the folks, and that they do a lot of, you know, they export a lot of their organic products to our country and to many other countries. And it's just how I can't believe, you know, here we are telling them what to do and how to, you know, handle their food.
No, it's quite amazing. And certainly we're seeing a trade war brewing between the EU and the U.S. over the issue of genetically engineered food, because consumers throughout Europe have said they don't want genetically engineered food. Consumers, you know, voters, citizens throughout Europe have said we want this stuff labeled. And so, I mean, the issue between the U.S. and the EU is, you know, how much rights do individuals have vis-a-vis companies, because the U.S. is really defending the interest of the companies in attacking the labeling provisions in Europe, because they know very well that once that food is labeled, people in Europe won't buy it. And the U.S. is trying to defend the interest of its companies to continue to sell genetically engineered food in Europe. But, you know, to this point, it looks like the European Union, the consumers, the politicians, the voters are winning out. They do have mandatory labeling required in Europe, and they do have a de facto moratorium in place. There have been no new approvals of genetically engineered crops for the past 2 years, and no end to that moratorium in sight. I mean, the voters, the citizens of Europe have spoken on this issue, and, you know, the U.S. is obviously quite upset about it, threatening to file a complaint with the World Trade Organization, and, you know, obviously the U.S. working only on behalf of the interests of companies,
yeah,
and certainly not respecting, you know, unfortunately not respecting the opinions and the, you know, of people in Europe of what they want to eat and what they don't want to eat.
It really scares me, the WTO, I don't know if many people know, but it's called the World Trade Organization. And so when there's conflicts with that sort of thing, that it goes to a three-member panel, is that correct? And they make the decision on what to do, and that's really scary. It's behind doors. Nobody hears the conversation. There's no information that can be given. It's just they make the decision. And this, again, just enforces the economics. And, you know, the American people are not being, I don't think, you know, listened to and voiced. First of all, I don't think we're educated on the issue. There's no education on genetic engineering. You know, every TV station you have is playing, you know, games or shows, or not really educational like Channel 2 does. But then again, you know, they're funding, you know, they only can do things that they're funded with. So this just brings a full circle of where a lot of the pieces I see are missing. And you're really putting in a big chunk of the pie, the first piece of the education, to really get this moving started. I'm excited that you're here at the show, because this has been one of my passions most of my life. I love gardening. I love eating healthy food. I mean, you can taste the difference. I bite into apples that are bought at a store, and my lips burn a little bit. And that's got to be from residue. And when I eat organic apples from my friend's farm in Maine, I don't have that problem. I can eat 20 of them. It's wonderful, you know. So I guess that's really big with the I see Bush is sort of, you know, looking over is the companies. He's not really looking at the welfare and the health of the people. I thought the government's for the people and by the people, but unfortunately, again, you know, it's proven that that's not where we're heading. So your job is the most important job that's going on right now. So I urge listeners to get involved this summer. I certainly am going to get involved this summer. I'm going to work with you all. I would love to do some leafleting and getting out there and just getting the word out, doing some press releases. We have some small newspapers here that will definitely take press releases and we'll put them in. So we'll get started. Another piece of that I'd like to talk about is people talk about price, money. It's expensive. I can't afford it. And to me, not affording to eat healthy, you know, you pay for what you, you know, you are what you eat. You are what you do. You are, and so eating healthy food is going to make you're going to have a healthy body. And one example I like to give is bananas. In some countries, you know, Chiquita, you pay 49 cents a banana. In organics, you pay 99. But for me, I have the rest in my head that when the fellow who's doing the organic is going in with the straw hat and the shorts and T-shirt and picking bananas, and the folks who are going in, you know, with the ones that use all the chemicals and use that sort of stuff are going in with these white suits and respirators to take the bananas off the trees. And then they're also radiating the bananas to make them last longer. Can anyone kind of go into that a little bit? Am I on the right track with that?
Well, I think you're definitely on the right track. And I think it's instructive to look at what the European countries are doing on organics. Because, in fact, perhaps it costs more in the beginning to start to transition from conventional agricultural production to organic production. But those countries throughout Europe, have taken societal decisions that, in fact, it's in the best interest of society to have food produced organically as opposed to conventionally, for all of those reasons that you've just outlined in terms of soil health, in terms of human health. And so the societal decision to promote organic has taken the form of government subsidies for farmers to transition to organic farming, and so that the cost isn't borne directly by the consumers, but it's a cost that's spread among all taxpayers because it seemed to be in the general interest of people, of eaters, of producers, of whatever. And so if we look at where our farm subsidies are going, farm subsidies that subsidize massive industrial agricultural
and that's all
production.
Where they're going, pretty much.
Right, that's where our farm subsidies are going to. We could take that huge amount of money that's going towards an unhealthy agriculture. I mean, we already have all of this money dedicated to agriculture. Right. Why not switch the priorities? Why not have that bulk of money, massive subsidization of agriculture, go towards subsidizing a healthy agriculture?
And creating sustainable development, sustainable jobs for families who really want to farm but can't. They're being pushed out of the market. They can't compete with this. I mean, I was in California and I just saw these huge machines, huge, just so scary of what they're doing. And you know, a clear example is Italy. 6,000 or 8,000 organic farms in 1996, and in 1998 they're already up to 40,000 registered organic farms.
Right.
That's not a 5% increase. That's like a 500% increase.
Right, and you have similar stories throughout Europe. You have stories in Switzerland, you have stories in Germany trying to go to 50% organic by the year 2010. You have stories in Sweden where their policy has been to try and reduce pesticide use. And so having their pesticide use over a period of 5 years and now, you know, again setting another 50% reduction goal beyond that.
Yeah, Sweden's already 70% of all the food produced is certified organic. That's extraordinary high percentage. That's really wonderful to hear. And so I guess we can take them as case studies to really, you know, we don't have to be the first ones to do this. So we do have a lot of education, a lot of help, you know, that we can get this movement started. So you just started in April, huh? The movement, Kim?
We did. No, Greenpeace. Greenpeace just launched his campaign here in April. And the campaign had also been our co-partner is Clean Water Action out of Boston, and she's been organizing in New England around different issues about biotechnology for the past couple of years. We hope to help give a push to this campaign with the education component because, one thing, remember that we're dealing with the corporate media and that Monsanto does have a $1 million PR campaign per week. per week.
our budget is probably not even that per year.
Exactly. So it really does kind of lay in our hands as educators to really educate the public at the supermarkets. But also, if people are interested in educating the group, we have videos. We have an action packet that people can call us and set up a talk. But just to take this information to the streets, because that's where we are going to educate, or into our communities, you know, into our churches and in different forms of our social structure that we have. And so people can, it can make a big difference.
Yeah, that's great. Just to go back to the food, I'm kind of jumping around. Doreen, can you give us a little sort of analyzation on sort of how do you make the transition? How does a family who wants to eat organically but says, you know, oh, economically I can't afford that? You have a little analysis, you know, what does EPA use that, you know, analysis? Sort of, can you give a couple of, you know, why it's important to transition and how, you know, how can you do that?
It depends on where you live on how difficult or easy it is to do it. And I would say, you know, for folks that are thinking about it, one step at a time. And, you know, one way to start increasing your consumption of organic vegetables is to grow your own. And if you live in an apartment, you know, put some lettuce plants and a tomato plant outside on the balcony. And, you know, so that's sort of one small step that people can take. Yeah. Depending on the area that you're in, one really neat option is something called community supported agriculture.
CSA.
Yeah, where you have local organic farms that you can buy a share in. And it's, you know, often $10 or $20 a week that you pay to the organic farmer, and every week they'll deliver a box of vegetables to you or to a location in your community, and you've got, you know, right there in your box, fresh, wholesome organic vegetables straight from the farm. Many CSAs also have programs where you can go out to the farm and actually do work on the farm and contribute that way and get to know who your farmer is. So the process of just connecting back to how your food is produced is a really important step as well. You know, moving from buying your produce from a large supermarket where it's, you know, sitting on, you know, and getting sprayed all day, to trying to find the farmer's market in your area.
Sustainable development again.
Yeah, and you may not be, when you go to the farmer's market, you may not, not every farmer there is organic, but every farmer there is giving you fresh, wholesome produce that hasn't been trucked halfway across the country. And so that's another way to start improving the food, you know, the quality of the food that you eat, just by buying local, by buying food that's been picked that morning instead of 2 weeks before.
Yeah, Anne Blackman came on the show and she was talking about CSA. She spent about $500 and had enough food. Every week there was so much food she couldn't eat it all, so she would blanch a lot of it, freeze it, and her kids and her eating carrots, fresh carrots, all winter long. So, and so she said she was spending about $1,600 on produce. Now, by doing the program, it's $500, and it, you know, so that it's a third of the cost. You're sustaining a farmer who, you know, if a farmer can get 40, 50 families to buy in, he's got a job for the summer. He's going to make some money for his family, and we're going to share the cost, and we're going to share the benefits. And it's just a wonderful, you know, I really enjoy that sort of holistic living, you know, if that's what I can call that.
Right. And with genetic engineering just feeds into the large-scale monoculture industrial agricultural model that, you know, is the predominant model of agriculture production in the U.S. right now. And, you know, Greenpeace is putting forward and asking other people to think about an alternative vision of agriculture, which is supporting local farmers, supporting organic farmers, you know, transitioning away from pesticide-laden agriculture to an agriculture that's safe for people and safe for the environment.
That's great. Jim, you got a question for any of them?
Oh, it's interesting. I was listening to a piece by a guy in Malaysia who is critical of the United States way of doing things, just in, critical in the extreme, I guess. But he was saying that the climate in the world is changing due to global warming in such ways that farmers can't predict what the seasons are going to be like. They can't know when to put a crop in or when to harvest anymore. All of the ancient wisdom is no good because the regions are changing. And more farmers are having or being driven to high cost agriculture, just out of self defense. They're building greenhouses, growing a lot of their stuff indoors, starting their plants indoors, because they have no idea what to expect in the way of the climate. How does a changeover to organic growing fit in with this? And yeah, I guess he was saying that corporations stand to gain a whole lot of money by making agriculture more expensive, and you know, in the long run, anyway, no matter what happens.
Well, corporations definitely stand to gain if you make a more expensive agriculture, and that's what genetic engineering is all about. So Monsanto is not just selling you pesticides anymore, but they're selling you the crops that are specifically designed to fit in with their pesticide system of agriculture. One story about organic agriculture and climate change that I think is, you know, gets at the question that you're raising. In Kenya, I was in Kenya about a year and a half ago, and I didn't go to see this particular farm, but a friend of mine that was in the country with me had gone around to look at different farms in the area, organic farms and non-organic farms, and Kenya had just been through a really serious drought. All of the farmers, whether they were organic or non-organic, had suffered from the drought. But where farmers who were not organic had completely lost their entire crop, the organic farmers, because organic pays attention to the health of the soil, it pays attention to soil structure and creating a healthy soil that can retain water even under really serious drought conditions. So the organic farmers there were actually able to get some production out of their fields where the non-organic farmers hadn't been. And so that attention to the health of the soil, the health of the ecosystem, creating a diverse biological system that crops are integrated into, farmers are going to be more able to, you know, there's just going to be more buffering capacity in those systems when they're confronted with, you know, the completely unpredictable weather that we're going to expect under climate change.
That's great.
Techniques that are traditional, like mulching, that they're carried to an extreme by organic farmers because that's the best way of getting a good crop. It also just happens to protect you against extremes of dryness or cold or whatever else you're worrying about.
Yep, exactly.
That's great. So we're wrapping up a few minutes. Another question I had for you, Kim, was, is this project going across all states in the United States, or is this just the Northeast? You know, are we a little model or you know, what's going on?
Greenpeace is actually involved in a national campaign that targets, nationally it's Safeway supermarkets. Here in the Northeast, we don't have any Safeway supermarkets. We have Shaw's. So that's why we're focused on Shaw's here in New England. But people are taking action. We're part of a coalition, GE Free Markets Coalition, which is different groups from around New England, around the U.S. that have come together, and people are working on this issue at different levels. But we're focused on the markets because we believe that this is where the pressure is really going to culminate and can lead to a big change.
That's great. I think this is so important that I'm going to see if Jim can get this downloader onto our webpage so that people can listen to it at any time.
Well, actually, you're listening to Thinking Out Loud on WJUL Lowell, and we can continue this discussion in a few more minutes if people are interested.
Great, yeah, and so I think, why don't you give your contact info again in case people really, you know, want to help out? And that's
sure. The phone number is 617-868-5079, and people can check out truefoodnow.org for more information. We also have a True Food Network, which is a national network. It's cyber-based, and you get updates on what you can take action alerts on the web. You also get an updated list of all the store brands that have genetically engineered ingredients in them, and it will help you connect with other activists. People can also check out NOFA.org. That's the Northeast Organic Farm Association, and that will tell you where your local farmers' markets are, as well as CSAs that you can get involved in. And then also, if you'd like to email myself at the office, it's kim.foster@dialb.greenpeace.org.
And how about people who are driving and are insane right now and cannot take any of this information down? Can they just look up Greenpeace in the Boston office and get a hold of you?
They sure can.
Yeah, so great. So if you're driving out there and you really want to get involved, just look up Greenpeace in Boston. And I want to thank you both for coming in. This was a great show. Really inspired me that we really are going to take off with the organic and sustainable future. Again, this is Thinking Out Loud, the Environmental Corner, WJUL Lowell 91.5. Jim, thanks for having us on, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. See you next week.
Whoever invented the fish finger ought to be transmogrified. Skin mashed and boxed into uniform blocks, then covered in breadcrumbs from collar to socks, and frozen, and finally